speaker for this session is David Dewsbury. David's been in the industry for about 10 years. He got his break building freeware games back in the days of the Quake community. He's worked in the US for a period of time, and he's also worked at Atari Melbourne House, and he's currently the technical director at IR Gurus. And David's pet hate, he informed me just before this session began, is that he hates Zelda games. So, I don't know about that one. I guess we'll try and sort of have some type of Q&A starting around 3 o'clock. So, but I'll hand over to David.
I don't actually hate Zelda games. I just like to say I do, partially because I thought it might be interesting to come out here and meet the Gears and Boobs, etc. Anyway, welcome to Game Connect. Hope you enjoy it. Chances are you're probably enjoying it more than I am, so I've spent the last few hours as a bit of a nervous wreck. You have to excuse me if I refer to my notes quite often. I spent some time coming up with this topic because I wanted to talk about something that was a little bit less about the present and a little bit more about the future, which I think is a little unusual for the for Game Connect or the AGDC before it. I could have come up here and just talked about how to program for next gen, but the thing is that there seems to be plenty of that going on this weekend. In fact, it almost feels like everyone who needs to know how to program next gen is doing a talk about it here at Game Connect. But I picked this topic because, in my mind, Game Connect shouldn't be just about education, but to some extent should also be about exploring what it means to be in the games industry and to be a games developer. So this talk may not answer as many questions as some of the other talks this weekend, but I'm hoping that it may raise some. Because to me at least, this topic is an important topic and something we should question, and the topic is language. Oops, the great thing about language, apart from the fact that it's critical to our livelihood, is that we are custom built to process it. Our brains have special case. Can everyone hear me, by the way? Our brains have special case language hardware without which we wouldn't be able to speak, write, or God forbid, code. We know this because neurologists have effectively debunked damaged brains, and we can extrapolate from the findings and say that the physical structure of the brain determines language structure, and furthermore, language structure determines the physical structure of our brains. And if anyone's read Snow Crash, they'll know exactly how excited that concept made one ex-coder. Neal Stephenson spent the better part of that novel mulling over the many, often bizarre consequences of the link between mind and language. If you've ever learned a second language, you might be very conscious of how important language is for basic thought and how hard it can be to think in a language that you're not completely comfortable with. So language is critical for even structured thought. But does that mean that the rules of language determine the structure of our thought, and how does that relate to programming languages? The Japanese language makes a great example of language to mull over. This language, when compared to English, is incredibly vague and lacks precision, conciseness, and definitiveness. Half of the meaning of sentences is typically implied or suggested through tone or some subtle action. It's almost as if the language itself was designed for irony, contradiction, and dual meanings. This property makes it the perfect language for poetry and song, but at the same time, it makes it extremely difficult to speak with the clarity needed for the scientific method. And guess what? Japan never developed science. They're a civilization stored in a primitive medieval state for many thousands of years. They never developed on their own any true understanding of physics, nor medicine, mathematics, or engineering. So Furthermore, they blocked out the outside world and successfully ignored foreign science and technology for thousands of years. So was it the crippled language that led to civilization in which the Zen koan was the height of philosophy and science, or was it the war-ravaged civilization that led to the language? And what has this got to do with the games industry? My point here is that language is important. Language determines thought, and doubly so for computer languages, and it's the very property that makes it difficult to see when it is the language itself that's holding us back. After all, how can you miss something that you can't describe? So I want to start off today with an assumption. Let's just assume for the moment that C++, as a primary language of the games industry, is not a viable option for the long-term future. You can decide for yourself afterwards whether this is the case or not. But for the sake of the thought experiment, let's assume C++ is like the medieval period in Japan, old-fashioned, seemingly never-ending, and blinding us to the possibilities. Let's take a look at modern C++ and break down some of the features in it that are relevant to the games industry. Of course, this list is by no means complete, and we'll talk about some more features in a second, but it illustrates something that I've been worried about for a while, and that is, this is a conspiracy theory part of the talk. Microsoft have been sitting on the edge of the console industry for a very long time. The first entry into it was a very unsuccessful one, and this was before the Xbox, back when Sega were making console hardware. The Dreamcast was Sega's boldest hope to regain market share, but they realized to compete with Sony, they would have to swallow their pride and use American parts for certain things. And because Sega's hardware division were a forward-thinking lot, they knew that in order for the DC to work, they would need a great GPU, a modem, a game matchmaking network, and a new type of OS. So they went to the market leader in GPUs, and they went to the market leader in OSs. And so Windows CE for the Dreamcast was born. The rest was history. The Dreamcast hardware was great, particularly when the 3D effects was replaced by PowerVR, which was a far superior piece of hardware. However, of course, the OS was horrible. Either way, Sega soon got out of the hardware business, which is a bit of a pity, because they were finally doing things right with the Dreamcast. They had some great hardware, and they were making some really great games. One in particular stands out to me as a bit of an ironic classic, and that game was called Sega Gaga. In this game, it took over the reins of Sega from the existing management and attempted to turn around its fortunes in the marketplace by making the best games ever. It's essentially a little bit like Lionhead's the movies, except a bit more postmodern. If you do well, you take Sega to world domination. Whereas in a more ironic mood, you could drive them into the ground and force them to sell their console hardware business. However, assuming you don't want to do that, assuming you want to make great games, you've got to whip your artists, chain up your testers, and coddle your programmers. Seeing this game for the first time was a bit of a turning point for me. And people who know me know that my entire philosophy of game development is focused around this game. And that's why I bring it up now for inspiration. There's just something about this image in particular that rings true. The way that the coders are stooped over their PCs, desperately typing away. I mean, if you look at those faces, even though they're just basic anime faces, you just know they're based on real-life coders, right? Anyway, I started to wonder, why are these guys working so hard, and why so passionately? I mean, let's look at that artist again. Doesn't that look like a much more fun job? Doesn't that look like the kind of thing you feel passionate about? But it's the programmers that are putting their all into it. And I reckon the answer, curiously enough and ironically enough, comes from the fact that it's really bloody hard to program in the games industry. Those of us who've been doing it for a while don't notice much anymore, but it's prone with potholes for the unsuspecting newbie coder. and when the first experience of any new programmer in the industry has been sat down in front of a giant list of all the language features they learned in university and are told, never do these things again, we've got to think at least part of the problem is the language itself. Japanese believe they can solve this problem through a force of will, because the Japanese believe they can solve any problem through a force of will. They call it chika. Some Westerners believe that as well. In fact, on my team at IRUS, we have a number of big chikara programs, as you could call them. In fact, so much so that we had to huddle the team around this giant fire extinguisher thing, in case one of them goes all tetsuo on us and burns the place down. Now, there's a point to all this crazy jibber-jabber, but in order to get to it, we'll have to look back at our language features diagram. And here, a somewhat scary proposition has arisen. Clearly, C-sharp, as a programming language, has many of the features we would want from a game programming language. There are some pretty obvious differences, however, between it and what we're used to, and some omissions. Perhaps most importantly, C-sharp has implicit garbage collection memory management scheme, which for some time has been equated with the devil in the games industry. But of course, we know as programmers, it's not all bad. Implicit memory management schemes do have a benefit in that they're inherently less error-prone, and in some cases, actually more memory-efficient, and result in faster allocations. Generally, implicit memory management schemes reduce the time to implement any given feature by a significant amount. Now, the Xbox 360 has 6 hardware cores, 6 hardware threads, 2 per core. What if we imagined a garbage-collected language that compiled down to native code and constantly performed incremental garbage collection, occupying, say, 100% of 1 or 2 of those hardware threads? That is, what if we were presented with a deal from the big red guy where we had to choose between never having to deal with any memory management code, memory leaks, ownership protocols, orphaning and adopting, free lists, none of that stuff, or retaining the list, retaining the use of that extra core? Now, hopefully the audience is now split between a bunch of big cheap-it-up programmers thinking, do you realize how many triangles I can push through my latest hard-coded assembly transform loop on a 3.2 GHz core? And a bunch of other programmers, let's call them free cell programmers, thinking, how many more features can I implement in my next game if I didn't have to worry about memory management? This is something we should think about carefully, because this, or something like it, is what Microsoft will probably offer us in the near future. C-sharp, as a language, is an optimization and a simplification of C++. Difficult features are dropped, and simple features are made even simpler, all in the name of reducing time to implement, effectively making that newbie coder's first day more pleasant. It reminds me of the way that George Orwell's 1984, Newspeak, is an optimization of English. In that novel, Newspeak is a unique language in that it's the only language in history that for which its vocabulary actually gets progressively smaller. The redundancy and expressiveness of English is collapsed and phased out in favour of childlike compound words, such as excellent becoming double plus good. In Orwell's universe, Big Brother realised that control of the language meant control of thought, and that redundancy in the language led to exactly the wrong type of chaos. In our language, that when they sharpen our double plus language, sorry, in our universe, when they sharpen our double plus language, Microsoft realized that control of the language means more than just that. Because in our language, he who controls the console hardware, the OS, the GPU specifications, development environment, the manufacturing process, the product approval, and the language controls us all. Now, are there any Microsoft people in the audience? I mean this as a tongue in cheek. And this no way represents the views of our users. I'll come back to this a little bit more and have to explain some more. Up for now, enough of the conspiracy theory stuff. Clearly, she sees Sharp, as it is now, is not the ideal language for the games industry moving forward. But to talk about the industry in the future, let's go back a bit in time first, back to 19th century Japan, where it turns out that a bunch of Americans eventually showed up and forced the country out of their isolation. And as they did that, they brought science and technology with them. They also helped set in motion something called the Meiji Restoration. This saw the emperor return to power. This is one of the great Japanese contradictions, in that for a few hundred years then, the divine, immortally souled god figure emperor was forced out of power by a mere warlord. Imagine how bold you would have to be as that warlord, even in medieval Japan, to force the emperor out of power. Of course, in the Meiji Restoration, the emperor was returned to the throne, and he welcomed the influences of the West and brought a period of rapid scientific learning, technological advancement, and, well, bloody war. But what's really, really ironic was that it was return of the Americans again in 1945 that saw the emperor lose the power gained in the Meiji Restoration. It was then that the emperor Hirohito, or Showa, using a dialect of Japanese known only to the well-educated, renounced for himself and for all future emperors divinity. And with that, we come full circle, and modern Japan was born. That event, of course, was directly preceded by the Manhattan Project in America, their race to build a nuclear weapon before the Germans. And a head mathematician on the job, critical to its success, was a guy named John von Neumann. Johnny was a brilliant mathematician, master of what is perhaps the most evolved language that we have. And he played a critical part in the creation of early computers. In his manifesto, the early draft on the report on EDVAC, he designed an innovative architecture which would become known as the von Neumann architecture and would become the basis for all PCs. Even today, a great majority of the PCs of computers conform to this basic architecture. But more importantly for us now, a great many programming languages, particularly imperative languages, consequently conform to this architecture, even to the point where these languages could not reasonably produce efficient results on non-von Neumann architected PCs. A man named John Backus complained about this in 1977 when he called all existing languages fat and flabby and identified a bottleneck in the architecture, which is still quite important and relevant today. And though John Backus's ability to identify and reject the well-established architecture is an example of truly innovative thinking, perhaps because of a dependence on von Neumann languages, 29 years later, we still haven't seen any traction in the non-von Neumann hardware stacks. Nowadays, instead, PC hardware is specifically architected to more efficiently run code compiled from common languages, such as C++, and are designed with many tricks and optimizations to reduce the impact of the von Neumann bottleneck, which has become present not just in the hardware, but in the language as well. This is a clear example of hardware determining language and language determining hardware in the PC world, just as we wondered about it in the human brain. It's also a great example of what happens to language over time. That is, we learn more and more about its limitations and problems. We analyze and catalog and study them. We can sometimes find workarounds and optimizations, but what we can often not do is correct them. Over time, a language gets stuck under the weight of its past endeavors. And soon, all we see are its flaws. Can programming be liberated? For John Backus's liberation, we've seen 29 years of no so far and no hope in sight. I believe, however, that the great thing about the games industry is its ability to resist being chained up. I never want to see the day when we ask, can the games industry be liberated? And the answer is no. A little bit more on this later. The von Neumann bottleneck is just one of the many problems in C++ before. It's also one of the most difficult problems to address because it's stuck under a particularly large amount of past endeavors. There are easier liberations to fight for, but I'm not going to go into the details in this talk about what's wrong with C++. I'm going to assume that everyone is a C++ programmer here and knows the advantages and disadvantages of the language. Instead, let's be a bit more forward-looking. Because not unlike the link between hardware and language, computer languages also help determine and are determined by the applications that are used to build. The C language shares a joint birth with something that chances are many of you are also not very fond of, and that is Unix. Unix was designed to run anywhere there is C, and C was specifically built to create large low-level systems such as Unix. Thompson and Ritchie's great bold step was to identify the need to invent the language in order to build the OS. And to this day, C and C++ are the languages made for operating systems and similar low-level systems. If you visit Strauss Group's webpage, you find a list of programs being built in C++. Things like operating systems, Adobe products, embedded systems, and right down the bottom, looking innocuous, games and games engines. Truth is, C and C++ are not languages built for creating games. We've hijacked them, put them to their task, perhaps due to a few key fortuitous properties of the language. Though at times, we're working at cross purposes to the language creator's intentions. One of the aspects of the industry is that the language doesn't take into account is one of its greatest properties, and that is the way in which it's continually innovative. The industry is on a long road, a road so long that we often forget it's there. And most of it, if a language is going to serve us well, it must be ready to evolve as quickly as the rest of the industry. And if we're going to understand how the language is going to evolve, we have to go back and look at how it got here. The first C++ standard was completed in 1997 and ratified in 1998 after it had been worked on for about 6 years. It then took about 4 or 5 years before compilers were reliably compliant. The ISO standards body requires that new standards not be produced more frequently, new iterations of the standard must not be produced more frequently than every 5 years. However, the C++ working group, as an organization of volunteers, works considerably more slower than this. They can, however, create additions to the standards, as well as correcting mistakes in the standards. And since 1998, the very first edition for the technical report is due fairly soon. And that's what it looks like. For comparison, since 1997, there have been 6 major revisions of the Java JRE and numerous customized versions and extensions. In a shorter period of time, there have been 3 major revisions of the .NET API, which have added not just new standard library functions, but also new features to the language. In 2003, work began on the next version of C++. And this is called C++ OX. The completed standard is expected to be out this decade in 2009. And we can probably expect reliable compiler support starting maybe around 2011. Around this time, we'll probably be starting the transition to the PS4 and the Xbox 720. The next slide lists some examples of the kind of things we should be expecting from the C++ standard. Now, a few of these are guaranteed, and most of them are just educated guesses. Don't read it all now, but if you analyze that list carefully, you notice that a number of features will be quite useful for this generation of consoles. In particular, standardized networking, optional garbage collection, user-defined memory models, metadata support, and threading support. And some of the changes also look like welcome relief to old problems, Move Semantics is a good example of this, if you're familiar with it. These features will be useful now, but let's think about where we're likely to be in 2011, and what are the kinds of demands on the language we'll have from the next generation of hardware. Now, of course, I can't reliably stand here and point at this and say this is what the future will look like. So early in the game, we can only make vague guesses and assumptions and extrapolations based on what information we have access to. But we can reasonably say that whatever the future holds, there'll be more of everything. When we first saw the cell, we wondered if the basic programming ideologies in C++ would hold up before those SPU units. It turns out they do, but just barely. Who knows if that will stretch for the future? The key point here is that the designers of C++ are not involved in the process of building consoles and know less about the future of the games industry than we do. The games industry is not a priority for C++, and C++ is not a priority for console manufacturers. We should all know by now that Sony, for all their good points, don't really care about us as developers. They expect us to be able to solve any problem, no matter how difficult the parameters, and enjoy it. And of course, Microsoft, being Microsoft, have an agenda. What we need from a language is something that's in sync with the hardware as it evolves. As a simple example, we need a language with threading support now, while games are making the transition to multi-threading, not in 6 years' time, in 2011. Ever since Commodore Perry showed up near Edo in Japan, the Western world has been the agents of change in Japan. And in particular, America has. The West has brought knowledge, destruction, and aid one after the other. Likewise, in our industry, hardware, the console hardware, is our greatest agent of change, and it also brings those three things. And like the Japanese, we deal with this change by adapting. And yet this one thing, the language, is unchanging generation after generation. It's like a wooden shrine in a concrete city. Let's look a bit at programming ideologies. Strauss first proposed that there should be an object-oriented version of C in 1980. And this was during the era of the Atari 2600 and the Intellivision. The first commercial release of C++ was in 1985. This was the same year that Microsoft Windows 1 came out. And since then, computer science has been active. Many new programming ideologies have been proposed and implemented in various languages. Typically, these ideologies are essentially impossible to implement without language-level support. However, during this time, C++ has still only adopted two major modern ideologies, that is, object-oriented systems and generic programming. Now, those two things are great, don't get me wrong, but we are really suffering from the lack of some of these things listed here. Each of these stock products are huge, involved topics. You could easily write a book on any one of those dot points, and its relevance to the games industry. Now, of course, C++ does provide some basic support for metaprogramming-like functionality, essentially by abusing quirks in the template syntax. In a similar fashion, we can get dynamic typing-like functionality. However, this is no substitute for language-level support. Anyone who's done any template metaprogramming in C++ knows that it's no easy task. And our gurus, because we're quite forward-thinking a lot, and because we understand the benefit of these modern ideologies, we effectively built a pseudo-language, or actually two unrelated pseudo-languages, that augment C++ with the features that we need. And while this allows us to solve, in a generalized way, certain problems, we found C++ quite restrictive due to numerous syntax inconsistencies and fundamental language structure issues. The result is some of our more complex solutions are less maintainable and less reusable than desirable. The nature of the language is, for implementations of sufficient sophistication, C++ tends to introduce as many problems as it does solutions. In short, the language is not as scalable as we would like to think, and though we've seen C++ adapt to incorporate new ideas in the past, recent history suggests we should be less than optimistic about the future. By the way, these slides are to demonstrate difficulties in the language, so they may not be the best coded arguments. Just keep that in mind. This line of thought introduces another interesting question, and one that's relevant to anyone building an engine out there, and that is, what is the difference between an engine and a language, including a standard library? Both are there to provide implementers with a basic level of domain-specific functionality, structure, and idioms. The biggest difference I can see is that an engine tends to be a hell of a lot more difficult to use, because the language probably wasn't designed with the engine in mind. Over the past few years, C++, in the IT industry as a whole, has clearly fallen in a niche. As interest declines in the language, we can only expect that new releases become less frequent in the future. Perhaps even C++ OX may be the last revision of the language we can expect to see. On the whole, the future looks a little bleak for the language. It has shown itself not capable of maintaining pace with the games industry, and even if it did, we shouldn't expect it to evolve in a way suited to the games industry. Nor should we expect C++ to incorporate the modern programming techniques we like to use. Well, on this point, the new sphere is full of varied and colourful programming languages. We've got ossificated ASCII languages, or graphical languages, and you've got a bunch of more practical languages as well. Now, there's a lot of different languages listed on this slide, and a lot of them are quite varied. Some are very innovative, some are experimental, and some are just evolutionary. However, one thing unites them all. I wouldn't recommend replacing C++ with any of these just yet. Instead, let's look at the history behind some of these languages. Firstly, Ada. Ada was funded by the US Department of Defense when they decided that no existing language was robust enough for the mission-critical operations. And in this case, mission-critical means software for the space shuttle, and later on, guidance systems for Boeing jets, that type of thing. Work began on the language in early 78, and the first version was ready by late 79. The entire project cost along the lines of $3.5 million, plus another $500,000 in related service programs. So it's about 2 years and $4 million. Sun began work on Java in 1991 and was ready for public release in 95. Though during that time, the team also built a number of other things, including a fully functional Spark-based PDA device. So it's around 4 years for Java. Erlang is a really interesting case, and that was internally built within Ericsson for internal use, and then later distributed to like-minded companies. Work began on that language in 1987, and the first version was released to users in 1991, so it was also around about 4 years there. Now, to get an idea of the size of these companies, here's a table of approximate annual revenues in US millions. And for comparison, of the top few publishers in the games industry. And some of you may have realized what I'm driving at now. The games industry has become a great beast, bigger than Hollywood, and gaining its size and financial power every year. As the industry grows, our techniques become more and more refined, and as a result, our needs become more and more specialized. If C++ looks a little shaky in the long term, and existing languages don't seem to fit the bill, then we, as an industry, shouldn't need to wait. As a large emerging industry, we've started out being driven by science and technology developed primarily for industries similar to, but not identical to our own. But sooner or later, any industry stops being driven by existing science, and instead, new science begins to be driven by the needs of that industry. We're reaching that turning point now, and you can see it in the sudden appearance of games degrees at universities worldwide. Suddenly, games as academia is much more well accepted. And this is happening all over the world, sometimes in surprising places. For example, right now, there's a guy in Ballarat doing a PhD on real-time calculations of sound reverb in arbitrary large environments, specifically with games in mind. That's just an example that springs to mind, and for me, that's truly innovative thinking. Recent history has shown us that the development of a language and its standard library is actually more affordable and completed sooner than we might expect at first. In an industry that is used to large, expensive software projects, development of a custom language, a full-blown replacement for C++, is surely not completely inconceivable. There's even at least one example of this from the last generation. I'm sure many of you are aware that Naughty Dog was working with Lisp for their games until recently. In actual fact, they were working with a modified version of Lisp, which they built by purchasing the source code to a standard implementation and adding custom functionality. This allowed them to introduce new functionality at the language level through intrinsics and custom keywords. Obviously, this would have presented them with many new options for optimizations and compile time error checking. Now, what a brilliant idea, and who would have thought of that? Now, this is a slightly awkward part of the talk where I have to reorganize that. And clearly, C++ could be augmented in the same way, and maybe even within the budget of a single project, by modifying GCC or some other similar compiler. Speaking to Sony recently, they don't recommend, but they recommend GCC as much as they recommend SMC for compiling PS3 programs. And of course, GCC is fully open source, plus Sony's editions are open source. But we can go further than that as an industry. Erlang is a great example of what we can achieve as a purpose-built domain-specific language. I don't think that it's unreasonable to say that this is currently within the reach of, say, Sony, Microsoft, EA, or Epic, or any large publisher, to create their own C++ alternative if they saw the need. But perhaps more importantly, it's within the reach of anyone, provided the cost is amortized across enough game projects. That is to say, a language could be developed extremely slowly over the course of many years, or more likely, as a coalition, be built by a coalition of studios working together. And this perhaps would be the ideal situation, because we don't need a million different languages. We just need one that meets the need of the industry as a whole. The key point here is simple. Despite my comments earlier, the fate of the industry doesn't necessarily align with Microsoft or Jan Straustrup or his cohorts. We are only tied to C and C++ and C#, in so much as we believe that they are the only choices. The fate of the industry is in our hands, and only we as software engineers in the games industry can and should determine the path of the industry, and only we can take action. It may sound heedlessly bold, but that is the nature of the industry. Boldness wins out in a creative industry because that is how innovation is born. Now, around about now, many of you are probably thinking, but what about? However, the answer to these questions is, I think, beyond the scope of this talk right now. So I won't answer them here. Instead, I'll have to leave them up to an exercise for the audience. These questions, though, are answerable, given the right attention and circumstances. Sure, there's a lot to think about, and clearly, like the von Neumann bottleneck, our liberation is threatened by the weight of past endeavours. But we mustn't shy away, because the day we see ourselves in a cage, the day we look at a challenge and call it insurmountable, it's the day the industry dies. Now, much of this talk is conjecture, and some of it, you could even say, is just based on gut feeling. It's even a little eccentric in places. But I hope the key message is clear, that language is important, and that we should set aside the belief that language is static, and it is something that we should question at every opportunity. Because there are plenty of games to make ahead of us, and because only through inaction can we fail. And that's it. I think I've finished slightly early, so there's plenty of time for Q&A.
Yeah, we've got about 15 minutes for Q&A. If you've got a question, please state your name and the company you work for. And if we have any trouble hearing someone, I'll reiterate the question. So has anyone got a question?
Karen Lowe, I'm just curious about the idea of getting all the studios to work on a new replacement language. One of the major strong points of C++, in my opinion, would be that it hasn't actually, in the language chain of users, but everyone in the industry starts with more than 10 years' experience, either in the industry or outside. So, if you introduce a new language, do you think we're going to have a problem of this?
I think, in the games industry, as software developers, we have to relearn things all the time. Every time a new console generation comes out, there's new things to learn. We have to learn about the hardware, we have to learn about what's fast and what's slow. We have to learn about new features, what's the latest shader that people are writing in the graphics engines. And stuff like that. We also have to learn about new engines. We're always developing new engines. And that comes with working with any engine requires a lot of knowledge about its internal working and what the functions do, what the parts do, etc. So in my mind, learning a new language is it's just another new thing to learn. And I think the industry has proven itself capable of learning new things. I've also seen in my team that people have been able to pick up modern languages like C# on the job as they're building an application very, very quickly, which is, to my mind, is a positive sign.
Matthew Pierce, Chrome Studios. Again, sort of going off that idea of the game companies being involved in developing a new language, a lot of the companies you quoted there as having created other languages, sort of general purpose tech companies who probably have a large portion of sort of R&D departments effectively, which isn't quite, pure R&D isn't quite so common in the game industry. Do you think academia and the academic institutions have a role to play in something like trying to develop a new language for the game industry?
Absolutely. Particularly if the industry were to make a single language, it would make sense for that language to be built primarily in the academic world somewhere. Essentially, where languages are typically built among computer scientists and software engineers.
Do you have a way of, do you see a way of that happening, do you think? Do you think it would be something of game companies going to the academic institutions and trying and saying, hey, this is something we need, and trying to partner with them? Or?
How would that process work?
That'd be a great PhD topic.
It'd be great
PhD topic, yeah.
I think the way it would start would be through us talking about it. I think the more we talk about it, the more likely it would be to happen. Because I don't, no one expects anyone to go about creating a language in a short period of time. It's something that the need is identified over the course of years, and over the course of years it's developed. So if anything's going to happen, it's not going to be You know, if someone like Sony or Microsoft decide they want a new language, it's not something that's just going to happen in the, you know, the very near future, I would say.
Throughout the presentation, you used the term domain-specific language, right, a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be the key to the whole problem. I don't think a game, even if you look at one game at a time, I don't think a game is a single domain. Within the game, you've got graphics, game mechanics, and audio, physics, and that's why we started using scripting. That's a domain-specific language, basically. You control things within your game world. There's a lot of code that created that domain. So maybe we should take that idea, extend that, and use more, let's say, right now, using C++ for technology and maybe single script language for the game world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should break away from that part and use more languages within the same game.
Well, I guess in a way that's the industry is, that's a way in which the industry is currently moving in this direction. When I was using the term domain-specific language, typically that term is used to describe very small languages with very extremely specific purposes. But I guess what I meant by it was something a little bit more general or generic, something a little bit more like Olang, which really is, from my understanding, a fully general language. It's just been optimized, as it were, to meet the needs of Ericsson to build communications.
Yeah, but that's where the exercise will fail. We will not agree on a general technology. You will not, in the example that you gave, where basically those languages were created within a single company and then shared.
Mm-hmm.
So someone had a specific problem and they identified that C++ is not a general language, it's not perfect, and they have resources to build something else. Then they share.
So you're saying that the type of language required by a graphics program is different to the type of language required by a physics program?
Yes, I think so. And even graphics, there are always different approaches to solve the same problem. So chances are that we will not agree. We will simply not agree, and the general, and we will not come to general solution to the problem.
Actually, well, if I said that, in your question and in your statement, they in a way actually support the argument as well, because you're saying all these different domains need different languages at the moment. All those people are using C++. So that's the same thing. They're all using the same language. And
yeah, but we're using the C++ because it's probably the most flexible out of all. And as soon as you kind of try to be a bit more specific, you're going to lose some of the flexibility and you will have to make compromises. And that's why we will not agree. And that's why we'll go back to C++, as we did all these years ago, where if you don't try to come up with another general language, if you kind of take a different direction and say, what about we do a language for physics, language for graphics, and language, there will be higher chance of
agreeing with each other. Entirely possible that could be the case. However, I could imagine a standard set of functionality or a standard set of language level functionality that all different areas in the games industry need to share. And I could... One of the things I thought about and wanted to talk about in one version of this script was going further into the ideas of metaprogramming and languages in which you build languages, basically trying to tie together the idea of an engine and a language closer together to the point where almost you're building the language as you're building the engine. And I can see that as potentially a solution to that problem by having a large amount of a metaprogramming functionality where you can determine the language through more language as a can potentially solve that particular issue.
Yeah, I'm playing over from the panel, she goes, I fundamentally agree with what you're talking about, and it seems to me that nowadays programming is about twisting C++ into a language which does the things that we want it to do, and teaching people not to use bad parts of it. So we're using a very small subset of functionality, and it's too easy to do bad things. And with the hardware changing as it is, and the language not changing, another language in some form would be the way to go. But I don't think that a committee is going to produce a language which is going to make everyone happy. We need one small team to be dedicated to do something like that. You know, if Sony comes together and Russell or if Microsoft do it.
I guess the question is, who is
about how the community will work?
I guess the real question is who would be that small group of people?
Yeah.
Who would have the initiative to actually go ahead and build this language? And one of the companies I put forward was Epic, because Epic are really the foremost middleware company at the moment.
They're a PC company. They make PC engines. Happen to kind of work on consoles.
It's been very financially successful for them at the moment. So I'd imagine they would probably continue along that path in the future. So I could potentially imagine that they might be a candidate for the type of people to work.
Do you really want to use an engine? Sorry, a language which is
built by a commercial industry?
That's just like Unreal 3 is?
Not particularly.
I think the key might be that the company is going to change it's not even the business model, change the attitude. Let's say the R&D department and all the companies were allowed to actually release the stuff. I think that would change a lot. If you look at IBM and Microsoft and Sony, how much the R&D department is actually publishing on the papers today. Sometimes it's new wacky technologies that are just simply shit. The game company will need more time. Maybe out of that soup somehow.
If someone does it right, like what Naughty Dog did, was brilliant.
But they can't release that. We can't have a look at it.
Apparently they rolled back to using a standard like C++ language because it became that much harder to bring new people on board and teach them how to use that language.
I've heard two separate stories about that. Yeah. Some people say it's because it was hard to find people to program in the language. And other people say it's because when they were incorporated with Sony, they needed to work with Sony's engines.
One thing I was going to suggest as to how you go about building that sort of stuff is maybe sort of open source projects where people do it in their spare time or whatever, and then you get people from all around the world interested and on board. And even there are companies out there that sponsor their employees to do open source work one day a week or something like that.
But then, yeah, it's a good idea. One thing we need to worry about is potentially falling into the same kind of trap we have in C++. It's built by volunteers, and they just don't have enough time to concentrate on it. The language is designed by human volunteers.
Mm-hmm. They'd have to be paid volunteers.
I've got a lot of fondness for C++. I think in general, my ideal language would be quite removed from that. But in terms of taking C++, special purpose in it for the games industry, fixing its flaws and introducing new features specific for the games industry, that's pretty much what D is. And that's not like to my mind, if you're going to continue along with the C++ family, then D's the natural progression for the game industry. Can we not just take that and use that? And I mean, the answer is we can. That seems to me to be, when you're talking about taking GCC, packing it to add new semantics and those sorts of things, I mean, they pretty much is that sort of very custom built language for the game industry that we're all familiar enough with the syntax that fixes the things that we need to do. So,
I did a little bit of research on D, but not a huge amount. So I know that it's incorporated some of the techniques or some of the ideas that are on the C++ OX line, and it's available at the moment. I guess some of the issues that we need to overcome are, one, get a PS3 compiler, and two, get an Xbox 360 compiler, 4D. But yeah, maybe it's an option.
design for TensorFlow actually suits those design architectures a lot more than what we've done in the past in terms of moving data around, especially when you have people who are used to it. Something like Python, maybe very far. What's far more built, but we actually have a good tree. And I think C++ will put guns on the terminal because it's good. C++ is that paradigm on. We adopted that, but I think we have to be on that whole paradigm is a challenge, not just technology, more so languages.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a really good point. Exactly. The way David thought about the system and the use of caches, etc., that's a particularly important thing in the games industry.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
Andrew Cameron from Planning and Interactive Entertainment. Is it really financially viable to move the whole industry into one new programming language? If you wanted to do it in the space of one console generation, so that the next consoles were designed for that language, could it really be afforded if you need to produce training, textbooks, engines, compilers?
And also to expand on that, say, for example, Sony decides to adopt, Microsoft doesn't, we get to a situation where, and I'm pretty sure we can all admit, a lot of the industry is built on ports to multiple systems as an easier way to generate revenue from those titles. So then the revenue from certain titles being reduced because they would then have to recode a title for what you do yourself.
I'll answer the second question first. There's one really good solution to that some languages have, and that is they compile into C. Some of the languages that were listed up in the languages slide, they will compile into C and move from C to another platform, which, strangely enough, tends to be a fairly good solution all of the time. As to the other question, is it viable? Is it affordable? We saw on that slide earlier. Well, we shouldn't underestimate the games industry. The games industry is very, very big as a whole. When the individual companies are moderately sized, apart from a few of them, if we look at the top 10 public games companies, that's $18 billion annual revenue. And that's up there with Ericsson, which is a huge communications company. So, in my mind, given that software is so important for the industry, it's a primary thing, that we spend so much time building applications, and if we consider as an industry building a new language, we might find that the cost saving is huge. In my mind, that the industry could afford it. Of course, difficult to say for sure without doing some detailed analysis, but I would say it could happen.
Okay, I'd like to thank David for his presentation. It was certainly entertaining and with a history lesson thrown in there as well. And I think you've certainly sparked some debate, which will probably make a good topic for a panel discussion next year. So please join me in thanking David.